Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 20th edition of Commodity Week. The Central Illinois cash grain market has tightened and lead option corn futures posted a technically friendly hookup. Does it point the way to higher corn futures or not? We'll ask our panel of analysts today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dave Hightower of the Hightower Report. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois, Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Let's open our discussion with this question. Over the past couple of weeks, Paul Cooley, many of our analysts have suggested making new crop sales at 575, basis the December contract or above. Is this still a good recommendation given the widening of the old new crop spread this week?
Yeah, I think, number one, you need to consider the old crop issue and new crop as two different worlds, Todd, and you have to consider them two different issues. The big factor is that when we go to the meetings and all the ground that was tilled, we think that the pedal will be to the metal, so to speak, and we will plant a lot of corn. The Informa group came out and basically said that we were going to have 3.1% more production than a year ago. You add up the corn and soybean acres at 169.3. It's 2.4 million acres ahead of last year's total planted acres. And my opinion is that we could threaten sub-$5 levels with normal weather production this coming fall. So I do think it's something that should be watched very carefully. Unfortunately, I don't think the farmers have sold enough stuff yet.
All right, so 575, is it a lower price? That's what I'm really asking. Are you still is 575 and above still a good recommendation, or is it moved?
You bet.
And Jackie Vakes.
Well, I think 575 is good, although we've done most of our coverage using options. And when we've gotten to that 575, 580 level, we've been able to actually cover $6 corn using bear put spreads with a sold call. And so I think it makes total sense. And when you know, we had the FSA information available to us this last year that there were 96 million planting intentions for corn this past year. Had we not had the bad weather, where would we be? And so I don't think it's out of the realm that people, they really have to take a step back. And instead of being so bullish, they have to look at risk management. And risk management is having at least enough sales in some way to cover your input costs.
Matt Bennett?
I agree with both what these guys said. And, you know, whenever I look at this through the lens of a farmer, the main thing I got to ask myself is, what's the profitability of selling 575 basis the December corn? We all know what our costs are at this stage of the game. We know what our inputs are going to cost us, seed costs. You know, those things have all been taken care of for the most part. Most guys got their fertilizer on this past fall. I think there's a really good chance, as Paul said, that we could be looking at some really big acreage this spring. So if I've got profitability on the table right now, I think the riskiest thing I could do is nothing to protect some of that value.
March corn this week had a high of $6.13¾, the low there at $5.92½, and the change week to week, Friday to Friday, up 12 cents at $6.11½. Remember, we give you the high of the low from the opening and the closes for all of the day trade, overnight and day trade, and open outcry and electronic as well. December contract in the corn pit at $5.51¾, down 3½ again. The March up 12 cents at $6.11½, and the December was down 3½ cents at $5.51¾. Let's go back to the old crop corn for just a bit. You want to take them up separately. Still some corn around someplace in somebody's bin, hidden from the world because it's not on the ground. What do we do with it?
Well, an important part of your obituary there, so to speak, was the 10 or 12 cents up for the week, and the basis also jumped about 10 or 12 cents for the week. And the bottom line is that's 20 cents into the farmer's pocket. The big factor here is that, as we do know, is that there is a major debate going out on in the countryside. Farmers want to move grain. They know that a 650 sale or higher was a good thing to do. The bottom line is we've got this basically pretty large supply of corn in the Midwest. The bottom line is, do we take free delayed price or do we just sell it? Some of the elevators are offering free delayed price, and a lot of grain is being moved, also being moved on contract. So the million-dollar question is, will we get 650? A weather forecast this weekend in South America is very important. But the rest of the story is it's going to be a waiting game, I think, before we get to 650 again.
A waiting game till we get 650. Do you take the free DP or do you just sell?
That's a good question. We're taking some free DP at our elevators. We actually started taking it a little bit earlier than what we normally do. There's been a lot of grain move off the farm. And, you know, a lot of the guys that weren't able to get in on the 650 corn kind of went into panic mode after the report last week. And this week, whenever we come in, and like Paul said, not only did we rally the nearby price, but we gained quite a bit in basis. And, you know, you saw a lot of happy guys, but I didn't see a whole lot of sales either.
Yeah, I can believe that. Well, I thought some of the interesting things that came out of the quarterly grain stocks last week is that farmers are sitting on 64% of the corn crop this year compared to 62% last year. It says to me that there weren't a lot of sales made at the end of the year. There wasn't a lot of free DP taken. And now the big question comes, the normal time we'd usually see more sales would be as we get into the seed time. And in talking with farmers, a lot of guys have paid in advance for seed. So I think the big question is, what normally motivates sales? It's either cleaning bins or it's needing cash, one of those two things. And, you know, the big thing I think that was missed on Thursday's report was that grain stocks were actually 415 million bushels lower than they were a year ago at this time on old crop. So, you know, that wasn't talked about. And our ending stocks in the U.S. were actually 25% less than they were a year ago. And so I think that traders themselves are looking at those numbers. That's part of what was pushing us higher as we've gone on through this week. And I think that, you know, the buyers of grain know it too.
You mentioned 650. Do you see that prior to planting, prior to April?
No, I don't.
May, June?
It'd be hard.
How about you?
I do.
June or
oh, no. No, I think
prior
to that, I think. Unless we come in with, even if we come in with a huge amount of acreage or the expectation is big, it's still a matter of there's a reason that basis got better this week with an improvement in price. There's a need for corn. And anytime you have farmers sitting on it, it's going to take something to really get it to move.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Obviously, whenever we get in the spring time frame, we should be looking more at the new crop. But to me, the bottom line is, if we can rally the new crop based upon any sort of weather circumstance, it's definitely going to pull the old crop up to an extent. So I don't see it happening right away. But on the other hand, I really didn't see the cash price improvement of 20 cents this week happening. I didn't think it would happen quite this quickly, so I got fooled a little bit this week myself.
Informa's numbers this week reminded you, Paul, and others that we're probably facing a very large planting of corn this year. You mentioned it early on. How much pressure will that put on the new crop price as we make our way into the planting season and then beyond?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, the orderly observation is that there is a tremendous economic advantage to plant corn. And with $300, $400, $500 an acre cash rent, a farmer's not going to plant soybeans. The third major factor here is that we don't have the tremendous boom and extra demand from the sugar or the ethanol side of the equation. Exports seem to be pretty hard to come by for the simple reason there's a lot of competitive feed grains out there, not only corn, but wheat. Wheat is a bigger problem in the world, and we've taught one thing that we have known these past 2 years with these higher prices. We don't really have to bid for acres, and also there's a big available supply of competitive grains in the world.
And while that supply is there and competitive, the numbers for wheat this week were pretty good, I think, on Friday when they came out. Is that right? If I remember correctly, I think I saw some export numbers that were fairly decent on Friday morning. You had something you wanted to add?
Well, the export numbers were really good. I don't know. I think that when you look at and we just had cattle on feed report out today, you know, and you look at the fact that we have 103% on feed compared to last year, and we know that some of the numbers here on this balance sheet for corn, they don't reflect distillers' usage. Okay, and so I think in general, it appears, at least in my mind, that the USDA has backed these numbers down in terms of export sales and ethanol and cattle or feed usage, and they can't back a whole lot more away. And so, you know, it's tough. A lot of acres won't make a lot of difference if we have a lot of demand. And, you know, it just depends. I think it's interesting to see that China was in buying again on export sales. They were there again today, excuse me. And they've been there every week for the last 7 weeks, very quietly, buying corn.
I really don't have a whole lot to add. I would say whenever we look at the acreage for this spring, we definitely need to keep in mind what the weather pattern is. You know, you see weather forecasts already, and granted, they could be dead wrong, but the tendency for a cooler, wetter spring is definitely showing its way up with the La Nina. And so, you know, if the weather isn't perfect, we have to lend ourselves a little bit of, knowledge from the previous year, and that, you know, the prevented plant acres may end up being an issue as well. So, you know, I don't want to just completely jump on the 95 million bandwagon yet, but I think with good weather, I'm certainly buying into it.
Jackie, you mentioned the cattle on feed numbers. There was a really unique disappearance number there that was 40% above last year. We looked it up, although I'm not sure that any of us can explain just exactly what happened. But what does that disappearance count for? Is it just a miscellaneous number in the cattle on feed that came out Friday afternoon?
Well, I'd call it a miscellaneous number. I mean, basically it accounts for death. It accounts for cattle that move out of the feedlot and actually go back out into the pasture, maybe ones that aren't performing as well, maybe ones that came into the feedlot because the pastures were in poor shape. And also moving from one feedlot to another feedlot, you know, it's kind of like shipping corn. If it moves from one berth to the next, it's kind of lost for a while. So I really look at it as that miscellaneous, just like we look at the feed usage residual number on the corn balance sheet. But that was significantly higher. It was 36,000 more animals this time than it was before. So I don't know. I really think you can't help but feel positive when you look at these numbers, though, as far as feeding goals.
As usage.
Sure. Yep.
March wheat futures, a 6.13 top this week, a bottom at 5.90, settlement price at 6.10.5, up 8.25, July at 7.15.25, up 5.25 for the new crop. Soybeans, March contract, $12.04 for the high, the low at 11.62.75 on the week. The March contract settled 28.75 higher at $11.87. November beans at $11.83.75, up 13.75 cents. March, November, same price, relatively speaking. The market says, hey, I kind of need beans, I guess. I don't know. What does it tell you?
Well, the old crop carryover is 275 million bushels, and if we use the arithmetic of the Sparks numbers of 73.6 million acres planted and using their yield, we come up with about 25 million more carryover next year, of 300 million bushel carryover. Somewhere along the line, the arithmetic goes like this, that if we get these rains this weekend, somewhere in Brazil and Argentina, they had a little bigger supply. It's awful hard to sell beans, other than we did sell probably 10 cargoes of beans this week. The arithmetic goes like this, that we have to do a lot of selling in this Jan, Feb, March, April time frame, And bingo, we are going to see competition again from South America. The bottom line is that the soybean market, I think, is going to struggle, and there's no need to really push value substantially higher at this time.
When you say you've got to make sales, we've got to do selling, you're talking about export sales, is that right?
Export sales, and the other problem is 275 million carryover doesn't really equate to $12 bushel of beans at the farm gate.
Do you want to move out old crop beans if you have anything left?
Well, the Informa group put in a sell order today, I think at 11:94 on the March. He got filled. If you were up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you probably got filled. The big factor here is that the bean market basically struggled on Friday's market as well.
A quick note on the beans?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Paul. In my opinion, I guess if you're just going to ask flat out, do I want to sell beans, a lot of it, of course, depends on where the guy's at. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't see a big rally in beans in the short run, and I would just as soon see a guy move their old beans.
Well, you know, and I guess if we're only going to focus on the U.S., I'd have to say that that's very true. But when you look at the world, we're down 7.5%, even with the big numbers that we've got projected for Brazil and Argentina right now.
When we come back, we'll talk with Dave Hightower of the Hightower Report. You're listening to the January 20 edition of Commodity Week.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This week, Illinois felt more like winter with colder temperatures and another bout of snow. The statewide average temperature for the week was 25.4 degrees. That's 1.4 degrees above normal. The statewide average precipitation was 0.5 inches, which is close to normal for this time of year. After the snow melted from the last winter storm, another system moved through the state on Thursday and Friday, bringing rain in southern Illinois, a wintry mix across the central part of the state, and up to 6 inches of snow in northern Illinois. The forecast for the next several days shows a warming trend. Highs for Saturday will range from the low 20s in northern Illinois to near 40 in southern Illinois. Lows Saturday night will range from the upper teens across northern Illinois to the low 30s in southern Illinois. Warmer on Sunday with highs ranging from the upper 30s in the northern part of the state to the 50s in the southern part of the state. The outlook for the next 2 weeks is for warmer and wetter than normal conditions to continue. The new monthly forecast for February also calls for above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the January 20 edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson in Champaign, and Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor. On the phone line is Dave Hightower with the Hightower Report. He's in Chicago. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Dave is an Effingham native, and while he doesn't make it back often, I hear, Dave, that you'll be in Mattoon on the first day of February. Is that right?
That is correct.
So you'll be down at the Days Inn, February 1st. That's at 6:30, so folks can find out some more details a bit later on that particular event. We're glad to have you around in our area because, well, we like the hometown boys to come back from time to time. Tell me about the marketplace as you see it for old and new crop and that 670 or 575 number I used earlier in the program for new crop sales for corn.
Well, I'm listening in. A lot of good information. I have to concur with a lot of the prior commentary that a big acre number is something that's very understandable. It's tangible. It's it can be scary. It can dampen speculative interest in the market. It's something that I believe will pretty much dominate, but perhaps for only another 45 days. And taking a step back, I think sometimes it's important to maybe take a different perspective and say, if I had to be a buyer, if I was a user of these commodities, how do I feel this year? What are my expectations? What are my fears? And logically, there's less fear on the part of the buyers. They realize that the corn has the profitability in Illinois and Iowa in particular. If they can plant corn and make money on it, they're going to have a predisposition to do that. But I think we need to realize that we're going to pile on the most negative outlook, and the USDA went a long way in helping us get there, and I believe that they're going to have to reverse a lot of that demand that they took out of the equation. And by the time we get into a May-June time frame, that the market's going to be back on the demand track and off of the supply side track. A couple of the things that I think are important as we start the year, because I have a different view. I think that demand has not relented, that ethanol demand, we had an ethanol report that came out on production, and people thought, well, this will see a significant backlash because of the end of the subsidy, and yet it didn't. Another thing to keep in mind is that we are seeing Brazil, who has become heavily reliant on biofuel, now importing ethanol. When you look at the gasoline market and the energy market in its own right, we have $100 oil, and I call that $100 oil with one hand tied behind our back because the economy's been very bad. But yet we've seen gasoline stocks tighten, and we have a situation now where the margin on ethanol is a lot less. So we stand a chance of periodically shutting off the ethanol output. And when you come to rely on 10.4% of ethanol for our gas supply chain, that's going to pull a significant leash. Other things to note, record poultry prices were logged this week, record feeder cattle prices. Cash cattle showed some significantly strong bids. We even had record chicken wing prices. Now, that may be due to the Super Bowl, but the markets are consuming what we have. And as we're going forward, I would say I would be very hedged up. I'd probably sell futures here. I'd probably be content to be short futures on old new crop corn, probably with only a 30 to 40 cent downside targeting in corn. And I hate to jump into beans already, but just for good measure, there could be as much as 50 to 70 cents down. But again, you don't want to go too far into this year maintaining that aggressive of a hedge stance if you're a producer, because as the calendar turns, these demand forces are going to be given more light. And so I would like to see, if we're going to talk 93.9 million acres, maybe we're even going to throw in a 95 million acre for good measure. Maybe by February 25th we'll have that open and notorious in the marketplace. And that's going to be a point that we might be seeing a low in these markets. Something else to look at, the corn non-commercial, non-reportable combined position, about 85,000 contracts. If that gets down to less than 50,000 net spec long, then I'm going to begin to, and again, this may seem like bad hedge advice, but if I get short corn and I can take 30 cents out of the downside, or if I get short beans and I take 50 cents out of the downside, I'm going to take that profit, put it in my pocket, and then I'm going to change my hedge. I'm going to go out and try and figure out a way to do it with cheap puts so I don't limit myself as we go through the year.
Dave, tip of the hat for taking time to be with us today, and I know you're a very hard worker in the commodity world and very well followed. What is your two top bullish trades, and what is your two most bearish trades this coming year?
For all commodities?
You bet.
Well, I think that cattle is maybe not by the end of this year, but I think cattle could do 160, maybe 150. This is a situation where the producers saw the demand to produce. Profitability wasn't there. Costs were too high because of feed. And so they dragged their feed naturally because they were fearful at any time that the Eurozone would dump on the world and we would not have that demand for beef. And so now we're behind the eight ball to where we can't possibly catch up. That's why I think we're going to find out a year from now that this USDA feed component that we just had in this last report was one of their worst calls in history. And so I think cattle, I think, is a huge opportunity here on the upside in the very near term. Those that are natural gas is another item. When you look at where we're at now, $2 in some sense, some offshore wells are now not profitable. That you can take natural gas and make it into other forms of energy now and substitute it. And so this is, and we have a huge net spec short in the natural gas. So that would be my top two picks. And I think that the natural gas has very little risk. May not be time for the reward, but you might get a pretty good look.
And to the bearish side?
To the bearish side, I mean, the soybeans in the near term, I think this is a there's one thing you got to watch in the next several weeks. If we get some switchovers with the grains vessels loading in Brazil, if we don't, if we start seeing some delays and China can't get their supplies out of there, it may switch some to our northwest, and that might give a false sense of security. But other than that, we could be as much as 70 cents down. And again, that's between now and 2.5 months down the road. I've kind of shortened up my predictions on a lot of these things because the world changes so frequently.
Dave, you know, so many times we have clients that complain about the funds and the impact that the funds have, and I know that you're well-versed in that. So could you just go into why it's important that we have fund traders in the market?
Well, this is maybe not something that large commercial entities like to hear, but, you know, for 15, 20, maybe even 30 years, the only big players in the market were the large commercial sellers. And so I remember in the early 80s and 90s, I just dreaded going to do presentations in the Farm Belt because it was such a dismal, depressing state. And at the time, the big players, which were synonymous with the funds at that time, they were sellers. And so they everyone began with a somewhat of a negative dislike for that. But now the funds, maybe they've created volatility. But they also, I think, to a degree, keep the commercials more honest. Another thing is that the funds, while it may cause higher prices, I think we need, as anyone that's heard me speak any time in the last 5 years, we need significantly higher prices sustainably so that we can feed the world and keep a cushion of stocks there. And if without that, without those funds holding that price up, we may not see that. One other thing to note. In the mid-2010 time frame, if you looked at 20 non-financial commodities and you looked at the speculative position, the non-reportables and the non-commercials, and you combine them, we had almost 2 million net longs in those non-financial commodities. And now we're down to liquidated 75% of that positioning. And so that's another reason why I'm pretty bullish for most physical prices later this year, because we've liquidated the spec long position. So I think it's important. I spoke with a top Indian official in the last month, and they were upset about speculation. And I said, you know, you of all people should want speculation because you want to know about a crisis developing. A real crisis, when it happens, means that millions of Indians will starve and there will be nothing that can be done about it. So we want as early of a warning shot as we possibly can, and the only way you're going to get that is if the markets are watching every minute detail that comes out. So I think they serve a heck of a function that we need in order to ensure supply for the future.
Yeah, Dave, whenever we talk about the market maybe sliding for the next 30 to 45 days in corn, one thing that comes to mind for me and that I know my producers are thinking really heavily about is the insurance price in the month of February. And considering last year we were looking at $6 plus for insurance, which made it a no-brainer if you could get in the field to plant corn. If we drop that thing back to maybe 550, 5.25, what effect do you think that might have on acreage? And considering a typical farmer that most of us might deal with might not be hedging their corn right now, like you suggested earlier, you know, how do you think that's going to affect acreage, and what would you do from there?
Well, you know, this might not be my strong point, but in my experience, if the profitability's there, and sometimes when it's not there, it's just really hard to discourage planting. And so I don't really have a hard time saying that you got to think that there's going to be a lot of acres, and maybe 95 is out there a little bit too far. But then I have to kind of throw it back on people and say, yeah, a lot of these acres, these fringe acres, I mean, we've been bringing in fringe acres and CRP acres now for several years, and I don't know if this trend yield decline is a function of that or the weather. No one really knows that, but it is going to be difficult the more we reach out from the perfect growing regions to get those yields up there. So I don't know. I just think you have to assume the worst. Demand is not going to overwhelm in the short term. You assume the worst on acres, and they'll probably just go pedal to the metal, as Paul said when we started.
You mentioned trend yields. The last 2 years flattened it out probably just a bit, actually has flattened that out. Will that make much of a difference in the way USDA's numbers are delivered and how the market reacts?
I think so. I think a lot of people thought that there was still some stuff in Ohio that maybe the USDA could have lowered yields a little bit more. This sounds like an evasive answer, but it doesn't matter until it matters. It doesn't matter now because we think that demand is bad. I don't believe that, and we see the horizon of supply. Now, when you get into the first, second week of June, then we're going to start reconsidering, well, what did we have last year? Because if we do have a little bit of a mishit, I mean, if you look at the world corn ending stocks to use ratio, we're still at a very tight level, as I think Jackie said earlier. So the bull story is going to come back into vogue, but just like this deep snow outside is covered up right now.
Dave, we're at the new part of the show here, as Todd winked at me. I'm going to give you four different commodities, and just tell me if you're bullish or bearish, and if you want to highlight it some way. But give me the dollar. Are you bullish or bearish?
Oh, the dollar. Oh, I thought you were saying the dollar value. Well, again,
no,
I kind of
he just
have
wanted you to give him dollars. That's
yeah, yeah, exactly. Actually, I'm bearish to the dollar because the dollar has been, since last October, it's been an all-in flight-to-quality safety net. And I have a different view than a lot of people. I think the Eurozone crisis is ending. Even though the ECB's been supporting these debt auctions, they are getting through them. And you know what? I've noticed, I call it the three strikes and you're out situation. In the markets, and I learned this through Chernobyl and Fukushima, that after a while the markets get worn out on a story. And after they've had three major reactions to it, they pretty much leave it alone. And so I think the Eurozone, believe it or not, is going to cease to be a big issue. And the dollars probably, all things considered, will be sharply lower by the time we get to midsummer.
How about the stock market?
The stock market, actually, if you look at the S&P, we saw this week, I believe, was it everything but the S&P made a new high? Mm-hmm. But when you look at the net spec and fund log in the S&P, you're 15, 20, 25,000. I didn't see tonight's COT figures, but it is not at an 85,000 level. And here's what I think. The stock market's telling us something. The Chinese are now back into an easing posture. Our Federal Reserve came to us and said, we're going to remain in an easing posture until unemployment's better, and even if we see higher inflation. So, and I think I saw a study today that says it's a 70% chance of higher equity prices in an election year where the incumbent running again. So, election year, Fed easing, bullish. So maybe not at this level. I mean, I hate to buy a bulge that we're on, but there's a reason why we're about to break out into year-and-a-half highs in the equity markets. That's because I think a sense of recovery.
And how about gold?
I don't know if any of you were in our seminar this weekend, but I was the seller of gold at 1,800. And again, I'm thinking, first of all, the gold's going to get back to 1,800, and earlier this week that was somewhat of a surprising prediction. But the gold market is maybe not going to be as interesting of an item as people think until we get really late in the year, and we need to get some economic capacity. So I think we're going to rally. That's another $140 in gold, and then I think we might have a little bit of a difficult summer because what gold needs. It's back to a classic physical commodity, and it needs a good recovery and some kind of whiff of inflation. And, boy, I'm just not ready to call that yet.
Okay. I didn't know. I thought you said you had four of them. Dave, you know, when you're looking at everything, if the technicals are stronger than the fundamentals in any market, how do you weigh that when you're trying to decide what you want to predict and what you want to advise?
Well, I mean, we are fundamentalists to the bone, in which we totally believe the technicals. We take them seriously. We let them guide an opinion that we've probably already had put in place. I mean, if you see a breakout in the corn market and you're coming into a 95 million acre market expectation in the next month, that's a real difficult thing. I mean, to go fundamental over the technicals there, that's a tough thing. So we're fundamentalists at heart, and I like to look at the technicals, and in the morning when we're writing our daily comments, we really, from the shorter term perspective, we raise up the importance of those technicals and tone down the importance of the fundamentals. So it all depends on, you know, what kind of, but if I'm a hedger, if I'm a buyer of grain or a seller of grain, and I'm thinking about how to handle 2012, I'm going to start with that fundamental picture, and I'm going to try and let the technicals maybe fine-tune what it is I'm trying to do. So whenever I'm looking to change my hedge coverage 30 days out from now, I'm going to be watching those technicals really close.
So what did you make of the hook up in old crop corn then this week?
Well, again, like I say, I have a high doubt of suspicion on that. I mean, it's probably, unless we can get some real volume and the companies that and some follow through, I don't know. I hope that you guys see a little bit of a bounce to sell some of the stuff that you're looking to sell, but I'm not too sure we're going to get it. It looks like the rain in South America is kind of going to keep a little bit of a lid on the market. So China's on holiday now, so you know, may see a little bit of a slowdown in their buying.
Yeah, Dave, a lot of the guys listening to this part podcast, if you will, I think might be a little more interested in getting more creative with their marketing than maybe the traditional guys. And, you know, volatility plays are something that you've preached quite a bit in the past. And so I've got just a quick question on that and then a follow-up. First of all, what kind of volatility play might you put in place on the corn market, depending upon where a guy's at? Let's just say a guy hasn't done a whole lot on the 12 crop yet. And then second of all, what other markets should these guys be watching other than the typical corn and soybeans and maybe crude oil markets that they watch on a day-to-day basis?
Well, again, for a producer, you know, these volatility plays, I'm a big, I do a lot, I guess I have a more direct hand in developing strategies for people that are going to buy the grain and use it. We are short corn futures and long a couple call options. We're hoping that this near-term break pays for our long protection as we go through the year. Now, a producer, again, I like to, when you get into November of last year or November of any crop year, that's when the producer needs to say, okay, I've got some final numbers from the crop. I want to, if I'm going to use a volatility hedge, I want to get that on as early as I can. And why do I want to do that? Because if I'm looking for a volatility play, I want as many USDA reports as I possibly can before those options expire. I want to get a look at every meandering in the crop as we go through the year, so that as from a producer, if you're trying to protect against the downside, maybe you're doing a short at the money put and long double slightly further out of the money put option play. And you know, that gives you one put to play with, and you should, and you can even on a big rally in the market, you can be trading the short put component of that strategy. And because as you get into past and into the 4th of July weekend, when the weather starts to become less prevalent, you want to be so far gone from being short any put and just having your full hedge on. So again, I like a big long strategic play. That gives me, I'd rather be lucky than good, and I'd like to have every benefit of the crop year that I possibly can. Other markets that I think we should be watching, you really do. I mean, the sugar market I think is really important. I think that it's going to surprise some people this year, but the crude oil market, I mean, you just can't, the energy market is something that If the subsidies are gone in both ethanol and biodiesel, and we have Iran threatening, all of a sudden we could throw all those biofuels back into a huge forward shift in demand, and that might be enough to just leverage the grain markets right out of their doldrums. So you really do have to watch the crude oil first and foremost.
Hey, you mentioned that on natural gas, you were thinking that that might be a good bullish trend to get into, despite its very low price at this point. Did you see and make note or have any comment on the legislation that was put forth in Washington, D.C. that would allow ethanol to be made from natural gas?
Yes, and I mean, let's be clear. First of all, I need to divulge that I am very long natural gas, and I intend to be long natural gas in my retirement and stay that way. I think it's for in retirement, long view stuff, $2 something natural gas is probably not something that's going to stand if the energy crisis is really for real. Now, the legislation, this is exactly, not this particular legislation, but stuff like this, we need that because we have so much supply. That's why the prices are where they're at. There's justification for prices to be this low. But we need those structural, regulatory, fundamental policy changes in order to wake this market up. I mean, other policy changes might be the limitation of fracking. If Iran close the Strait of Hormuz, that'll be another thing that may jet natural gas to the upside. And it is, we've already seen, I think there was a 15% shift last year, 15% of all coal electrical generation was shifted over to natural gas. So it's getting there. It just takes a while to do it.
Well, we thank you so much for taking the time with us. And I'm going to let you do something that usually our guests do not. We always give the folks in studio time for a final little note on the program. We're going to get those from each of these, and we're going to have you do one at the very end, too. So we'll start with Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Stop by the ADM booth in Gordyville. Justin Wood, Kathy Hanner, and Dan Zwicker will be there staffing this boat.
And Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Well, it looks like we're heading into another complex and interesting marketing year. Make sure you stay on top of everything and keep your eye on the value of your whole crop.
Matt Bennett, I know you've got one, but I also want to make sure that folks, when I mentioned earlier that Dave Hightower would be in, that's a TGM meeting, I think, and it's at the Day's End, 6:30 on February 1st.
Yep, he'll be down there at 6:30, and we're going to have him in for a good presentation and several questions, so anybody is welcome. We're going to invite just about anybody that wants to come, whether they deal with TGM or not. My final word as far as the markets go is just flat out we need to be looking at profitability. That's the name of the game. Don't get caught up in what your neighbor says he's selling his crop for because he's probably not telling you the truth. Just be profitable.
And Dave Hightower.
Well, don't rely too much on opinions from people like me and others. I think relying on good strategic positioning and volatility plays, and if you don't know what that means, you need to get with a good broker, one of these guys on here today, because that's imperative to thriving in these volatile markets.
Well, thanks so much for listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. And to our guest, Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, and, of course, to Dave Hightower, the Hightower Report. That's HightowerReport.com. He's in Chicago, Illinois. And that wraps up another edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.